Welcome back to Avery Ventures Podcast. Today we have an awesome episode. We have Jeff Brozovich and Donald Trump Jr. We did it down at the SHOT Show in Vegas. We did it late at night, and I forgot to record the first three, 4 minutes of the episode. So they were gracious enough to get through my jacking the podcast up and start over again. I know they're busy guys, and I appreciate it. When you get a second, also check out mountainops.com. We love their products. They support this podcast, so please support them. And if you like this podcast, please check out the rest of our podcasts at AveryAdventures.com on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. Here's Jeff and Don.
Today on the show, we have Jeff Brozovich and Donald Trump Jr. Both these guys are very avid sportsmen. I met Jeff through shooting long range, and it sounds like Don met Jeff from shooting long range. Mm-hmm. Can you guys kind of talk about how you guys met?
Yeah, it was kind of a conversation we got into. I don't think we really realized at first who we were talking to, each other, just sharing information on a forum-based deal and about reloading and some, pet loads and for different cartridges, and it kind of went from there. And then I believe Don sent us an Instagram message. I kind of remember it, like I said to my son, says, hey, we got a guy here, Donald Trump Jr. is asking you some questions. I said, find out who that joker is. It's not Donald Trump Jr.
That a lot, by the way.
I was going to say, I believe it probably went more like, oh, bullshit, Daniel.
Yeah. Well, Daniel comes back and says, Dad, you got a couple million followers. I'm pretty sure it's him.
Anyway. You probably can't fake the follower count on that one.
So it just went on from there, and we just started talking, and next thing you know, we were shooting together, and it's been a great relationship. We've had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was one of those, Jeff was kind enough to invite me out and say, hey, it's season, you want to come out? And I was like, sure. And I also don't think he thought I'd take him up on it, and we had a great time, and I, end up even bringing my little guys out and, hunting with them and shooting with them and getting them into it. And for me, it's about passing it on to that next generation. And we just had a good time and become, perhaps unlikely friends, but it's been great. And he's just become a, just someone I like to hang out with, which is awesome.
So how long have you been into the long range shooting, hunting?
I got into it pretty early, actually. I mean, I've been doing this for probably since end of high school. I went to boarding school in sort of central Pennsylvania, and guys like Bobby Hart and stuff like that sort of met me and my brother and got us into it, way before other people were really doing it. But, way before the technology was even...
Before it was cool.
Before it was cool and before, people had really even thought it was doable.
Right, right.
When you see what's going on now in the advancements, I mean, every year, what was long range last year is like barely mid-range this year.
And
it's,
absolutely.
It's evolved so far, but I mean, it wasn't all that long ago. And when I was starting to, 600 to 800 yards was long range, 1,000 yards, and beyond, especially from a hunting perspective or anything like that, was almost unheard of. And then, what you're doing now and able to do now, is just a whole different world. Obviously putting in the trigger time, right? I think some of the disservice that people do is like, yes, just because the gun is capable doesn't mean the shooter is. And that's the problem I have with some of it. You know what I mean? It's great to be able to go with a guy like Jeff, where you can still learn something, and have that experience. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jeff's spot is a beautiful place to learn and shoot long range over there in Montana. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned over there was it's a whole different ballgame. I live in northern Idaho where it's really hard to get long range. Jeff can walk out his door and he's plucking a mile right off the bat.
Well, I live in the People's Republic of New York. I mean, it's amazing we can even have guns, let alone shoot far. So we have 600 yards at, a little farm we have upstate. And so, that's great for load development and testing sort of, basic drops. It'll get you pretty good out to about 1,000. But, it's so nice to be able to go out, Jeff, bring just whatever gear. It's like, I got to get a, 1,800 yard just drop just to really see what things are really doing. And it's awesome to be able to do that. I mean, we had some pretty serious, first round hits this year at, our best was probably 24-20. I think we found one, sort of crazy rock in the middle of nowhere and just dumped it, and it was awesome.
Where did it shot? Where did it start? I mean, did you start with a BB gun in the backyard, or
my grandfather on my mother's side, who's just a great guy. He was a blue collar electrician from communist Czechoslovakia. He saw the lifestyle that we lived in New York, and it was sort of like, wow, that's amazing. The opportunity that you have, how blessed you are from that perspective. He also wanted to make sure that the negatives of that didn't catch up to us, that we didn't take things for granted, that we weren't, spoiled that way. And so from a very young age, I spoke the language. It was a big part of my life. He brought me over you know, again, communist Czechoslovakia in the 80s, and it was a very different world. It was sort of, you know, there's the woods, I'll see you at dark. You know, he got me into shooting air guns. You couldn't hunt over there because, you know, he was a regular guy. He wasn't this, like, elite, whatever, and that was sort of, you know, the difference between American hunting and a lot of European hunting, and certainly under that regime, where only the top guys could do anything like that, and anyone else, if you got doing it, you go to jail for 30 years. So, you know, I couldn't really hunt there, but, you know, he got me into the outdoorsmanship, the woodsmanship, you know, time around a campfire. And then, you know, he passed away when I was about 12, but I already had that passion for just being outdoors and fishing, and we could do some of that. And went to boarding school in central Pennsylvania. A couple guys took me under their wing and said, you know, here, let's go. And it was awesome. And, you know, just never looked back. Read every book there was, took every opportunity it was. I'm not exactly a shy guy, so if I saw someone that was doing something cool, I'd be like, can you take me? You know, you ask long enough, eventually they say yes, and, you know, you win. It's great.
That's how I got in on Ryan's bear hunt. He does every deer. Nice. He goes, hey, oh, you go bear hunting? Can I go?
That's how he got me to marry him.
Yeah. How did he pull that off? I mean, have been heavy booze involved as well. I mean,
actually, a little bit of everything.
Definitely outkicked my coverage. One thing I appreciate about you, Don, is you. I watched your video with Jason on your recent stone sheep hunt.
Oh, cool.
You're not just a guy that's going to some, you know, farm raised plane. Yeah. You put the time in your backpack, and that's no easy feat, that kind of sheep hunting.
No, that was a tough one also. I mean, we work hard for it. That's what I sort of train all year round to be able to do that hunt. And I mean, listen, that doesn't mean I don't like doing, you know, the backyard hunt where I've been spending all summer clearing shooting lanes to shoot, you know, deer with a bow 150 yards from my cabin. You know, I love it all, but, you know, that to me is the ultimate. When you can get out there, you're, you know, 14 days living out of a pack, doing it real. I mean, it's one of those when, you know, hey, you bring up all the antis and the people that go after at me for having been hunting and stuff like that. It's like, I put it up there because, honestly, you have to be a truly sick individual to try to complain about something that, you know, that pure, that intense. It's really, honestly, it's more of a physical challenge than it is even a hunt.
Absolutely.
You're obviously hunting, but it's really, it's like a great endurance race.
How many days were you out there?
I think I was probably, about 12 days, 10, 12 days. You know, you'd sort of lose track of time.
Right.
And on an average hunt like that, I try to get, you know, one or two of those in a year. I mean, I'm dropping 20 pounds in a 10-day hunt, eating, you know, as much as you can possibly carry. But it's brutal at altitude. We put in the miles. I mean, I know Jason posted in the video. I mean, we had miles on miles, and we worked for it. It was awesome.
How do you – I know you're a busy, busy man.
Yeah.
How do you get in shape for that kind of a hunt?
I'm one of those like CrossFit crazy guys, so I do that 4 or 5 days a week, and then what I would do before that hunt, because, you know, going in with a guy like Jason, who's a former professional athlete, and he does this, and he lives it, and, you know, Brendan Burns, his guy, you know, it's like, hey, I'm way too competitive. I'm not going in there and having those guys beat my ass up the mountain. So, you know, I would do the CrossFit 3, 4, 5 days a week, and then what I would do is I'd just get on a stepper, put a 60-pound, you know, pack on, and just go, you know.
You definitely didn't whiff on the shot.
No,
your first shot was money.
Oh, no, they were, you know, but hey, also, when you got a stone sheep like that after working as hard, you're going to make sure, just in case. But no, you saw the vapor trail in the video. I was like, I know I hit it good. Listen, I don't pull the trigger if I don't feel comfortable. Jeff shooting me sheet long enough. I can hold my own. Again, you've seen stranger things happen. So we're going to take the chance, you know, put the other one in, anchor them before they roll down a hill and something like that, and gets that one harder to drag them out.
Absolutely. Was that your first sheep?
No, that was my fourth sheep.
You have the slam?
I don't have the slam. I'm missing the Rocky Mountain. So I got a Fannin. So, you know, it's called the Stone again.
Yes.
Shot a doll up in Alaska. Shot desert down in Mexico.
So you have plans for that bighorn this year?
Not yet. I got to figure it out. I want to find the right one and do it. But that's sort of the goal, is to finish that thing off. That's sort of the first one. I mean, plenty of goals left, but that's the one I really want to finish off.
What would you say your favorite species is to hunt?
I would say... You know, if I could, I like it all. You know, I mean, I have fun doing everything, you know, including waterfowl. It just depends, you know, what's in season, right? Like,
exactly.
What am I sick of by this time of the year? You know, there's something so majestic about the elk right now. While I have my knees, while I'm able to do it, while I'm in shape, I mean, that mountain hunting for sheep is just, it's the ultimate. I mean, and again, just part of it's because it's the test. Again,
absolutely.
Even more so than the hunt.
Have you done any bow hunting for elk?
I have. I shot a beautiful elk this year with a bow. Shot a 365 elk with a bow.
Compound or stick?
I do both.
Oh, really?
I shoot a lot of trad, but I'm actually my local, recurve, you know, club champion as well. as compounds. But so I do it all. I love the stick bow because for me, you know, I live in New York. I hunt a lot of weekends. You know, we don't have great big deer like I have when I get to go to my friends' places in Texas and stuff like that. So, you know, I started shooting the stick bow because, you know, if I'm shooting, you know, does for meat or whatever, it just becomes that much more of a challenge. I mean, you shoot a doe with a stick bow in close and you've done it, and it's like, it's just as intense an experience as if I shot a big buck with a compound. It's, you know, it's that next level. And, you know, part of it for me is the prep going up to it. So, you know, being able to do those things, playing with them. It, I mean, it took me years to get good. And I, you know, I didn't have the mentor to teach me how to shoot a stick bow properly. So I made every mistake there possibly was. I mean, you know, years just, you know, trying the instinctive thing and just, you know, being able to hold a pie plate at about 3 yards. I was like, okay, we got to probably have to do a little bit better than that.
And, right.
You know, sort of, you know, going to a system and, you know, gap shooting and, you know, point of aim and, you know, all, everything in between and figuring out what really works for me. But then once you get it and click and you've made all those mistakes, man, those lessons really learn and you can shoot pretty well. It's amazing what you can do with them. And for me, that's such a challenge. I just love it.
Well, that's impressive. I didn't expect you to say the stick bow side because
not many people do.
Yeah.
I told you he's the real deal.
So, you know, that's a true statement.
And you know me, no matter who it is, if we went out hunting the first time and, you know, and it wasn't what it was supposed to be, we wouldn't still be hunting together. But when we go, we do it and we have a ball. And, you know, it's Don's a hunter. Yeah. He's a hunter.
Yeah, you put the time in to do a stick bow gap, you know, instinctive, whatever you're doing, you're putting in the time to make it work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing. You can't just be good by picking that up. That's
No, but I like it all. I mean, you know, I hunt with handguns, as you've seen.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Took my cow tag with a handgun just to make it a challenge to make the stock, and you know,
and took his and, you know, and got in close and got his elk with a handgun and had his son with him. You know, D3 was right there with him. And
what kind of handgun?
An XP.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What scope on it?
What I have on that one, I love some of the specialty pistol stuff. So I shoot everything from, you know, some of the Freedom Arms revolvers, and, you know, depending on what it is that it, you know, I'm doing, sometimes iron, sometimes scope, you know, usually just low power, just, you know, 2 to 4X or some of the, you know, the 2.5 to 8, you know, loopholes that you can put on those.
Right.
And then I have guns that are set up, you know, they're basically, you know, long range rifle handguns, and I'm actually putting, you know, a rifle scope on, getting in close, backing off a little bit, and being able to, you know, dial in drops for, you know, shooting 600, 700, 800 yards with a handgun. Not hunting usually as much with those,
right,
you know, at those ranges, but just for plinking and fun and all that.
If you have to pick a caliber for long range shooting, what you going to go with?
Man,
putting you on the spot.
I mean, if you had one, I have to go with a big 338. So I mean, that Terminator that I have is...
You've definitely been hanging out with Jeff.
If I could only have one, but, you know, listen, what's long range, right? I mean, it's so...
Oh, exactly.
You know, again, you know, if, you know, hunting gun, sheep gun out to 600, 700, 800 yards, you know, love my 6.5 284. You know what I mean? It's or a couple of them, you know, bunch of 7mm, bunch of 30s in there. And, you know, like I said, if I have one that I got to make a shot at 1700, 1800 yards or whatever, not even hunting at those ranges, but just... If I'm shooting at those ranges, it's hard to beat those, you know, that 300 grain burger going as fast as those things are, you know, out of that Lapua improved. It's pretty sick.
Yeah.
All right. What manufacturers, do you have any specific, or are you just whatever you
want? I have a lot of friends in the industry, and, you know, that's, you know, so much of what we were doing on the campaign. I mean, you know, people, I knew so many people from competitive shooting, from, you know, high power, from some of the long range stuff, from F class. So, I mean, walking around the show, the SHOT Show floor here today, it was like, it's like I felt like a hot chick for the first time in my life. It was like, you know, grown men with beards. Don, I love you. Because, you know, they know that
I love you too?
It was sort of like, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that.
At least they weren't throwing their panties at you.
It was close. There were a couple. They looked like they were in process of taking them off. It was kind of scary.
That could have gotten sketchy.
But, yeah, it was sort of nice. It was like, this was the one place in America I could probably do no wrong at this point. Because people knew that, you know, we took a very strong Second Amendment stance. They knew that we were real. They, you know, you can't really fake it. You can get up and... We've all seen the politicians doing their thing. They're standing there with a shotgun. It's never been fired. Their finger's on the trigger. The safety's off. They're pointing it at someone's face, and they're telling you how much they know about the Second Amendment and guns, and they really don't. So, you know, we were able to do that. So I have so many friends in the industry, you know, great guys at Christensen, guys at Gunworks, guys at Defiance, Manor Stock. You know, we have them all, and, you know, luckily I've been spoiled enough to be able to shoot and play with and own a lot of great stuff. For me, honestly, half the fun is getting a new gun and getting it to the point where it's shooting lights out. And then I'm, like, bored with it. And it's, like, now it's, like, on to the next project. It's, you know, then I'm also have that sickness of, you know, a gun that could have 1,500 rounds on the barrel. Once I get to about 75 rounds, I'm like, I don't want to wear out the throat. I got to take it easy.
Jeez, who does that sound like?
I'm an animal. Yeah.
So where do you shoot? I mean, where do you do your shooting back east? I mean, is there?
I have a bunch of, you know, a couple of cool old clubs that have been there for a long time, and you know, go up there. And like I said, I haven't spent a weekend in New York City in 10 years. So we go up. I have a cabin up in the Catskills. In the summer, we're fly fishing. In the winter, we're hunting. I do travel a lot for hunting, and I sort of get, you know, a couple big hunts in a year. But then I'll also, you know, like you've seen, I'll go to Montana if I draw a tag. I'll be like, I got 2 days. If I don't do it, I don't do it. If I do, great.
We do some quick hunts.
But I will take, you know, the chance that I'm going out there and realize that it's not that likely and see if I can make it happen. I'll hunt harder. I'll hunt longer. I'll push harder than most. But I end up trying to bang out a lot of stuff in, you know, sort of a three-day weekend. And if I draw the tag and that's all I got is 3 days, I'm still going to go. I just go with the mentality knowing that, hey, it may not be likely, but if you work harder, you can put the odds in your favor and see what happens.
Yeah.
The passion's there and it's strong. You know, we put in quite a hunt this year. You know, it's like hunt one day, went to another, hunted the next day, come back, hunted there again. And then, you know, it's like, okay, we're out of tags. What are we going to do tomorrow morning? Is it, wow, let's go shoot some rocks. You know, so next thing you know, we're banging rocks at 2,300 yards, you know, and I got to get to the airport.
Yeah, almost missed that flight.
That's the way it is. It's fast and furious for sure.
Yeah, when you're dropping them in there tight and you're making those first round hits at those extreme distances, it was hard to leave. I was like, I don't know. I'm sort of on a roll here. We're going to just stick around.
Yeah. I feel like that's what you are set up with, though, Jeff, because when we went on our cat hunt, it was like we were like on the clock to get it done.
Yeah.
And it's like you're good under pressure. I have to give that to you.
Well, speaking of that, Jeff started long range only, and I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for the stuff he knows about long range. Is there anything that he's shown you that you didn't know?
I've competed in high power, long range, you know, some guys that are, you know, just good buddies of mine are in here, you know, multiple time national champions. And honestly, like, you know, for an East Coast guy, you know, I've gotten to the point where you see a lot of guys, there's not a lot that I'm actually learning from them anymore. And when I met Jeff, right, I was like, wow, like, it's great to see that they're, and again, that's not ego or anything like that. It's just, you do it long enough, you hang out with enough guys that really know what they're doing, and you do it. And so you started talking to Jeff. It was like, wow, like, it's great. Like, someone else that can help me get even to that next level. Because there's always another level, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely.
But, you know, finding, you know, once you start getting to a certain point, it's harder to find the number of guys that know more than you and can teach you something and can help influence you and, you know, bring you into those opportunities to learn something new is amazing. And, I mean, he was one of those rare guys in the last, you know, it's called decade, where I was able to find someone. I was like, whoa, my God. Like, just, Don, shut your mouth and sit back and listen, because you're going to learn something and you're going to get better. And, you know, for me, that's all it's about. It's about, you know, taking it to the next level. It's about that improvement. It's about, you know, making that shot that used to be a tougher shot and making it a chip shot.
Did he ever do the stand back and just shake his head at you?
I don't know. Have I got that yet? Not to my face. Maybe behind my back, but I'm not aware of it yet. Not yet.
Standing behind you.
Yeah.
He's done that to me several times.
Yeah.
Just kind of said, what the hell are you doing?
There may have been one or two, you know, putting it in for some of the real long range stuff where you maybe missed the decimal point on the, on the pressure. And it's like, we're 7 minutes off on that dope. It's like, it doesn't seem right. I was like, how is the 1,700 yard dope actually less than the 2,200 yard dope? What are we doing here? So,
what would you say is your most precious animal that you have hunted?
Man, you know, like I said, I've been blessed to do a lot, but I think for me, it was probably my first elk with a bow. I mean, I hunted 28 days straight, public land in Colorado. Wow. I'm the first graduate of the Wharton School of Finance, where my father went to school, to move to Colorado to be a bartender and a fly fishing, you know, somewhat guide when my other friends who are actual guides were hungover, like fill in for them. And it was an awesome time. And I, you know, basically moved out there, make sure I knew what I was getting into before going into sort of the family business and everything. And so, you know, and a couple guys, you know, former U.S. ski team guys, so we were young, in shape, and, like, we went 28 days in a row, public land, outside of, you know, Aspen, just, and all three of us arrowed out. So it was, like, I think the odds at the time were, like, 2%. So for all three of us to go, was, you know, 2 times, it was pretty crazy, and we all tagged out. I tagged out on the last day of 28 days, and we were logging some serious vertical in there because we were young and stupid enough to do it. And it was, like, a crappy, like, raghorn 4x4, probably didn't break, you know, may not have even broken 100. It was legal, but it was legal because it was, like, goofy as hell. I was like, Jesus Christ. And, you know, end up shooting this thing at 7 yards, and it was just, like, incredible.
This isn't something you do for show. This is Donald Trump Jr.'s passion.
That's what I do. That's what I do. I hunt and fish. I basically had to cull all the other hobbies because there's just not enough time. And now that I have young kids, you know, it's passing it on. You know, not to say that I was ever an angel growing up. I was probably a bit of a troublemaker. But, you know, I think the outdoors really, you know, kept me out of a lot of other stuff I would have gotten into, you know,
right,
being the son of a rich guy from New York City. And, you know, when you're in a tree stand at 4 o'clock in the morning or in a duck blind at the same, it's sort of hard. You know, like I said,
it's hard to get into
not
trouble.
Not saying I was an angel, but there was a different motivation. And I think, you know, if I can pass that on to my kids, you know, not only that, but also really the lessons that you get from, you know, hunting, fishing, the shooting sports, you know, patience, perseverance, understanding like the consequences, like these are real things.
Right.
So, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, these are all things that are missing in our kids today. They don't have, everything's instant gratification and we got to be super, you know, there is no patience. There is no, you know, understanding the magnitude of these things. I think the outdoor sports have been so good for that. And it's just such a great way to sort of decompress from everyday life. I want to make sure that exists for the next generation.
Absolutely.
On that note, you brought up public lands on your elk hunt. That's kind of a hot button issue now. And everybody's like, oh, those guys are just giving us lip service. What do you see in the future for public land hunting?
No, listen, I think it's been great. You know, guys like Ryan Zinke, you know, these are guys that want to make sure that our public lands are available to other people, you know, to regular Americans. That's their land. They want to do and you see sort of these marketing campaigns. Well, we want to block off 29 million acres. You can't possibly do anything because there's a way to have the best of both worlds where you can have some things, where you can do this. Where, you know, look at what's happened in Montana with all the wildfires. Because you had standing dead timber that no one would do anything with. You couldn't, you know. And, you know, some of the monuments where, well, it's public land. Yeah, but they haven't maintained the road. They haven't done anything. You can't possibly get in there. The average guy can't go 17 miles in to bring his kid hunting, you know, on a road that's not maintained. And so, yes, the access is theoretically there, but in reality, it's not. And so what they've been able to do already is, you know, reclaim some of these lands, open up parks, take these things that have been landlocked. I mean, you deal with, you have a landlocked land, you know, you know, open them up, make those transfers so that you actually have real access, that people can do it. Because guess what? If you used to be able to hunt here and you can't go anymore, you have to now drive 7 hours to be able to do it. You're not taking your kid to do that. You're picking up golf.
Right.
Absolutely. You're going to take up another hobby. And so it's about making sure that it's really there for you know, all Americans. And we've been saying that from day one. It's something I believe in. I think Ryan Zinke is doing, again, as Secretary of the Interior, is doing a great job in doing that. Now, because we're Republican, you know, because we are who we are, you have sort of the natural opposition. They can't do anything but say, no, it's a disaster. It's, you know, but when you look at what's really happening, it's just not true. And making sure that those lands are available for everyone is a fundamental part of what we've been talking about. I stumped on it, you know, because it means something to me. Because, again, I want to make sure that those same opportunities, those same benefits that I got from being in the outdoors are available to everyone.
Dear God, you do pay attention.
Because
it's the access thing what you're talking about.
Hey, just because it's public, you know, again, you don't manage the road, you don't manage the culverts, the road's going to wash out. Guess what? You know, the public land 17 miles in there. Yeah, oh yeah, it's still public land.
But you ain't getting in
there. But you're not getting in there. And the average guy can't actually utilize that land. And so there's so many of these groups that are claiming to be, well, we're all 400. You're not. They would prefer that no one ever goes in there, that no one ever shoots anything, that no one ever sees it. And that's just not realistic. You know, same thing. You know, they would like to take the entire middle of the country and say, well, you can't possibly put a, you know, 1 acre drilling platform in there. Now, it doesn't mean you have to do it recklessly.
Right.
You can there is a way to actually have the best of all worlds, you know, where you can have some energy production, that you can have the jobs associated with it. Same thing with timber in Montana. If they'd have been managing those, you know, matchsticks, you know, what? Old growth is like probably the worst habitat for animals to begin with.
Right.
You let it die and stand, and it's a disaster waiting to happen. Instead, you could actually generate some money, create some jobs, create better browse for the fauna and flora that are there thriving on it, which leads to better herds, which leads to more people being able to access it. Right? Same thing with a lot of the wolves issue, right?
Oh, yes.
You know, that's obviously more sensitive, but you introduce a wolf that's a different species of the thing that used to be there. It's twice as big. It hunts in packs. It kills for fun. You know, it eliminates the herds. I mean, it's almost like that's their end game. They want to get rid of the herds so that they can basically eliminate the notion of hunting for future generations. Absolutely. With something that wasn't naturally there to begin with. You know, just because they call it the same thing doesn't mean it is.
Right.
Yeah. And you see that. And then they bring it to the courts in D.C. where you have a judge that has no idea what the hell they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Stall tactics, you know, basically trying to play a long game. And it's not right. And someone has to call it out. And that's like, it's the one thing we're good at is we're not afraid to take on and tackle a thing. So,
absolutely.
You know, again, yeah. You know, I don't have any involvement in that, but I know the people that do. And before, you know, during the transition period, I think we're able to get some really good people in those positions to be able to actually take a stance. And I think Zinke's done a phenomenal job with that. And he's a guy that's going to do what he says he's going to do. He's a commander of SEAL Team 6 for 15 years. It's like, right. You know, it's someone I want making decisions for those kind of things in the future because they're going to do, you know, they're not playing a game of politics. They're doing what actually is right and what makes sense.
I'm happy to hear that. I don't understand why a fire goes through and it's okay to salvage log it and you only get half the wood out of it. Why not log it before it's a problem?
Exactly. You know, and again, then they say, well, we want to control this stuff ourselves, yada, 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 but then we want the federal government to spend billions dealing with the issue afterwards. Doesn't make sense. Like, we could actually have a net positive rather than pure losses, damage of homes, mm-hmm. disasters, and create jobs in the process, animals. Keep people employed in those markets. Like, it's such a no-brainer. But you have a lot of people putting a lot of money into marketing campaigns, spilling, you know, either untruths or partial truths, you know, to try to stop that from happening. And it's a shame. And it shouldn't happen.
Yeah, and you hear constantly you guys are definitely, you know, the federal government, not necessarily you guys, but you're going to sell off those lands. And you simply think that is not true.
No, it's not. I mean, it's not. But what they'll do is they'll take, you know, Jeff, you've dealt with this, you know, in a place that you manage where there's a landlocked, you know, piece of public land surrounded by private that has no access. You know, now, there are places like that where I know these guys that are pretending they're all these public, they're flying in helicopters dropping in. So it's basically private land that's not. But it's, you know, if you took that, you move this piece of here and you transfer. One, you can create actual real access where it could be usable. But they're saying, well, you know, that's a transfer of public land. It's like, yeah, but you're actually net positive, A, because you have access. Many of these people would be willing to actually say, hey, fine, here's more acreage just so we're not then dealing with people trespassing. We're not dealing with people poaching our place. You know, there's so much sense. Hey, there's public land 400 yards here off of where we are, off the Vegas Strip.
Really?
There's no animals that live there. There's no habitat that's going to be there. If that land is sold in exchange for perhaps other great, you know, land in Montana, like, it's a net benefit. But the way the other side will market it is, you're selling public lands. It's just not, you know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, but you're selling public land that's nothing's being used on. It's next to a, you know, the Vegas Strip.
Right.
It's just not the same. And so what they're about is trying to make sure that you're creating opportunity for other people to be able to use their real public lands, to be able to hunt, to be able to fish, and not just hunting, fishing, you know, mountain biking, access, but to get in there, not just say, these things are off limits, you can't touch them ever again, you can't possibly even go in there, God forbid you camp out. I mean, it's not what was intended. I mean, that's not the model that Roosevelt really created.
Right. No, I'd agree with that. What's your general thought on delisting grizzly bears in Montana, northwest Montana?
Listen, I think every state's going to have their own issues with it. But, I mean, I know there are areas where they're very plentiful, and I know there's areas that they're not. And, I mean, I think you have to look at it on a case-by-case basis. I mean, you know, there are, you know, and I've seen it myself with some of the hunting, and, you know, there are things that are just, they're harder to justify from a marketing basis because, you know, if I post a picture of a whitetail, nothing. If I ever posted a picture of a bear, it'd be like, you know,
yeah.
Heads would be exploding.
Or a wolf.
And it's not, yeah, no, and I've dealt with, hey, the issue comes up when you talk about conservation in Africa. I've seen it, you know, from, you know, there are things that you can't say, even if it's beneficial. You know, you talk about, you know, lions in Africa. Well, they're a beautiful, majestic animal, especially when you live in a building in New York City. Now, when you have to walk 5 miles through the high grass to go to the river in the morning, you know, and you have young children and you raise cattle, it's not the same. And you can't, you know, we can't assume that it's the same for them. So if there's, you don't want to ever look at something from a commoditized standpoint where you say, well, there's an, but if that lion, they don't look at it as this great majestic animal. If it's killing their cattle and it's not generating other income on its own, it's a problem. And I've seen it over there because I've been over there 9 times hunting, you know. They, you know, the cattle carcass will pour some poison on it. The next night, the whole pride comes in, feeds off of it, everything dies. You know, and same with a lot of the species over there like that. And, you know, again, I don't do much of that, but it, you know, you see it yourself. Now, someone's coming in hunting, it's generating revenue. It's, I mean, the tip that that guy, you know, will make, you know, being a tracker on a hunt is probably more than he'd earn in an entire year for a 2-week hunt. All of a sudden, guess what? There's a real incentive to make sure that those things stay safe. You know, if it takes out a cattle, okay, we're going to let that one go.
right.
rather than taking matters in our hands. And you can't help them because, I mean, that's their livelihood. It's very different. And so, again, it's hard. You know, a couple guys, you know, I'm friendly with Ivan Carter and some of those guys. And, I mean, he said it best. It's like, we try to solve third world problems with first world solutions, and it doesn't always work that way because, you know, we can't fully fathom the way they're looking at things because it's just, it's so different.
Right.
We can't put ourselves in those shoes because we don't live that way. And so it is, listen, man, it's a really difficult issue. But, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it's been pretty effective for a long time, and it's frankly common sense. And so while it may not always be good to look at it that way, we really have to. I mean, there's a reason the North American model has been so effective.
Right.
It's a reason we have what we have versus so many other places in the world that have been, you know, just decimated. And, you know, I think we got to consider that. But it's harder when you have sort of, well, everything's a teddy bear, and this is a cute, and, they, you know, these animals are beautiful, and they talk nicely because they have a stuffed animal of a wolf once. You know, it's like, hey, it's you know, Mother Nature isn't the nicest, most friendly place, you know, at times, right?
There's, the Lion King doesn't exist.
Yeah, it's a little different.
It's interesting there's a hierarchy. If you post a picture of a fish being Donald Trump Jr., it's okay. If you post a picture of a bear that you'd shot, you're going to get lambasted.
No. It now that it's me, it's even different. If I post a picture of a fish, it's still a disaster. It's like, oh, my God. You know, I do a lot of trout fishing. I post pictures. I will literally be like, hashtag catch and release. You killed the fish. What? I mean, it's people have lost their mind. But, like, again, I think, you know, again, because it's me, there's that four effect. And, I mean, people sort of try to jump on it. And, you know, and I don't post a lot of kill shots because it's not, you know, right. It's not necessary. I think most of the time if I'm posting pictures of, you know, hunting, it's to me, outdoors, in the woods, you know, whether I get something or not is almost irrelevant. If I do, I usually don't do it because there's no reason to inflame the other side. Those who know what I'm doing. Those who don't, doesn't matter, you know. But for me, like I said, it is so much more than just the kill shot. I mean, it's about the experience. Now that I have little guys, it's like it's about getting them outdoors and having them see something that's really pure and wholesome. And it's, you know, you've seen that.
Oh, absolutely.
I even brought my 5-year-old out this year with Jeff, and you know,
awesome.
Realizing that it could totally ruin the hunt.
Those boys had a blast,
and they had a great time.
And and we didn't spend much time in the house. You know, we're up in the mountains with them, and we got pictures of them in the trees. They're climbing trees.
I'm like, it's a dead tree. Please stop climbing. 2 minutes later. Hey, Dad, take a picture of me at the top of the tree. I'm like,
the tree goes up and splits. There's one on each side. They're seeing who can get the highest. They were having a ball. Yeah.
So on a lighter note, going into 2018, you got any big plans hunting-wise?
Ooh, man. You know, I guess we got a lot of the congressional races and the Senate races up, so we're doing some hunting, a little bit different.
I guess that's a different kind, but it is still hunting.
I'll probably make it back up north to do another sheep hunt this summer. You know, always some stuff local, whatever I can – I guess it'll depend on what I draw. You know, I have a bunch of things in there. So, you know, we'll see. Maybe I'll get lucky and pull off some other good tags and, you know, hopefully end up back with Jeff in the fall. And, you know, just whatever I can, whenever I can.
I guess that's the great thing about Montana. There seems to always be tags in that state.
Yeah.
I've been pretty lucky. You know, it doesn't always work. But, you know, generally speaking, I'll draw one of the two, you know, in terms of elk and mule deer. Sometimes get lucky to pull off the combo and, yeah, see what we can do. But now we'll always be out there. And again, I do so many little weekend trips that, and again, I don't like to overlook just the local stuff. You know, the stuff that every guy's gonna, you know, be able to do that lives at least in a rural area. And I have just as much fun doing that many times as I do, you know, sort of the adventures.
I guess landed on this. Who's a better shot, you or your brother?
Oh man, obviously me. If you're gonna put me on the spot, but Eric can also hold his own. We have a good time, and it's sort of a good ham and egg. We've gone through many. At times, you know, sort of cases of shells to be the tiebreaker, you know, on a lot of these things. So,
is it competitive?
Oh, it gets ugly, man. You know, in our family, everything's competitive. If you're not competitive, we wouldn't have made it this far. We'd have starved.
So does he hunt too, or just shoot?
Yeah, he does. He does. I probably do a little more hunting than Eric, and he probably does a little bit more, like, you know, clay shooting than I do. But, you know, we get out and we have a good time and just, you know, really believe in the stuff and, you know the benefits of it sort of. You know, like I said earlier, there's sort of the guys that talk and there's guys that actually live it as a lifestyle. And for me, it's my lifestyle. It's what I do, you know, when I'm not in a suit working. And it's pretty quick that I change. So we have a good time with it and just really, really enjoy what it's done for us, for our lives, and hope to make sure that that's there for our kids and other people's kids for the next generation because just invaluable lessons can be learned.
What about your wives? Yeah. Convinced either of them.
My wife was not a little bit. You know, when she became before she had kids, there was actually a different mentality. You know, once she had kids, she took on sort of like a mama bear approach. And it was like all of a sudden it was a little different. But she gets it and doesn't do as much of it. But she's all for like me taking my boys out and, you know, doing it and, you know, you try to get my daughter out into it as well. And she was actually really into it as a kid. And then she had a sort of one of these teachers that sort of poisoned her against it. And she was like, I went hunting with my daddy over Thanksgiving. We had a great time. You can't do that. I mean, it was almost lost my mind. But you know, so we'll get her back in the fold. She's sort of, she's the athlete I always wanted all my boys to be and stuff like that. So you know,
nice.
We'll get her out there. She'll be shooting a lot, and she's good with the. We'll get her back.
I know you have time crunch, but the one thing I would suggest you do is get out there and try to kill a bull with a stick bow. It'll change your life.
Like I said, I do a lot of it, so I'll get out there. The difference for me is not living there, where it's like, hey, I can go every weekend and try to go. It's, you know, like I said, sometimes I may be going out for 3 days. You know, I got a great elk this year with my compound, but the shot I had to make with the compound was not a shot I would have taken with a recurve.
Right.
You know, I shot it at 54 yards, which well within my range, you know, on a compound, but it's not where I would have. You know, I'm going to keep it under 35 with my recurve. And, you know, just you have to have sort of that discipline. So, you know, if I lived out west, that's what I'd be doing because I could go every weekend. I could keep putting in the time. I could do it. But, you know, if I get to go out once, it's like I got 3 days and that's my chance for that tag.
Right.
And so, you know, I haven't fully committed to it for that. That it's basically all I hunt locally, though.
Really?
Yeah, with the stick bow.
All the deer?
Yeah, all my, you know, New York State stuff, all my local. That's
man,
not all, but 90% stick bow.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I love stick. I love long range, and I love stick bow hunting. But it's just such a perishable skill that you have to keep up on. So,
yeah. I mean, listen. I think you can make it for me if I'm shooting a system and stuff like that. I can keep it pretty tight, pretty reasonable as long as I'm not going to those outer edges. But yeah, it does make a difference when you know anyone can pull up to their target the first time. But you know, sit in a tree stand for 4 hours, freeze your butt off. You know, wear all these extra layers and then make that same shot at an angle and all this stuff, and it's a whole different world. So, yeah, you got to stick with it. But that's what makes it fun. I mean, it's the discipline that it takes to do that and knowing what your limitations are and sticking with it toward, you know, it's the perseverance and, you know, discipline that's so lacking everywhere else in most people's lives these days. So
that's true.
That's what I love about it.
Well, Don, Jeff, we really appreciate you guys coming.
Before we go. Don has to make a shout out to our kids. They won't let us back home if we don't. So
Lane and Aubrey, you know, why aren't you in Vegas? You should be. I mean,
because they're 15 and 17.
Come on, man! It's, you know,
and they have
Vegas
school.
Is a family place now. I've heard.
not my 17-year-old son yet.
No. Oh, yeah. I'm sure he's behaving right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, mom, no. Dad, they're gone. Yeah. Who's over at the house? Yeah, right. Sure. Nothing.
Party.
He got in a minor fender bender while we were gone. It was very interesting.
In my car.
Well, yeah.
It's great.
He's not dumb enough to do it in his car. So if I'm going to destroy someone's car, I'd rather it be someone else's. You know, it's a.
Yeah. So. Yeah, well, exactly. Thank you for doing that.
My pleasure, guys.
We appreciate both of you. Thanks a lot.
Thanks
Thank
for doing
you.
It.
Thank you. Thank you.